said, let us rise up and kneel. So they strengthened their hands for this good work. Then I told them of the hand of my God, which was good upon me, as also the king's words that he had spoken unto me. And they said, let us rise up and kneel. So they strengthened their hands for sisters, the book of Nehemiah. Some scholars will suggest it's the last book of the books of history in the Old Testament. Of course, there are the first five books that we call the Pentateuch, and then there are the books of history, and then the books of the major prophets and the minor prophets. And some will suggest that Nehemiah, along with the book of Ezra, are the last of the history books of the Old Testament. Is Nehemiah Chronicles of the last period of the exile and the restoration of the Jews back to Jerusalem after both the Assyrian exile and the Babylonian exile? Here's Nehemiah, who had been in the court of Susa. He was the cupbearer for the king of Susa. And the cupbearer in this time period was actually a very high position. For us, it would be likened unto just a butler. A servant in the home. But he was the cupbearer for Artaxerxes I, the king of Persia. The reason why the role of cupbearer was so very important is because the cupbearer not only had to serve the wine, but the cupbearer also had to taste the wine before the king drank the wine to see if it was poisoned. Why the role of the cupbearer was so important, Ron, is because the cupbearer had to taste the wine first before he served the wine to the king to make sure that it was not poison. Dr. Parker, you weren't there to test the wine. No scientist was there. No DHEC was there to make sure that the wine was good after. But you knew the wine was bad or the wine was poison if the cupbearer died. You might not know this, but the presidential detail in the Secret Service that whenever the president goes out of the country, you know, they have to taste the food first to make sure that, again, that it is not poison. And the Secret Service member dies, you know, not to eat at that hotel or that restaurant. So it was a very important position because you risk your life every time. It also was a position, Ron, because the cupbearer was always at the king's table. So whatever the king talked about, the cupbearer heard. Whatever his advisors advised, the cupbearer heard. He was almost a body man. He was a chief advisor, really, to the king, because he got to hear all the things that everybody advised the kings. And you know that those persons who are close in proximity to the king, even close proximity to a pastor, close proximity to a leader, are those who give advice, and the pastor or the king is always asking them advice because they have heard all the chatter and all the murmurings, and so they are in tune to what the community is saying, they are in tune to what the advisor is saying, and because they are a trusted member of the cabinet, the king would look unto Nehemiah for advice. The king was not Jewish. The king was not a child of Israel. But because he respected Nehemiah, one day Nehemiah came to the king and asked permission for him to allow him to leave his court, to leave his position, and travel back to Jerusalem to assist his people with the restoration of the capital of Israel. So it was King David himself who was able to conquer the Jebusites and turned their city called Jebus into Jerusalem. And Jerusalem literally means the city of peace. It was from the beginning, since David made it the capital of Israel, still remains the center city and the capital of
all three Abrahamic religions, that being Judaism, Christianity, and Islam, all three Abrahamic religions that stem from the lineage of Abraham, the different sons and grandsons and ancestors of Abraham, all of them looked at Jerusalem as a major city. And for us then, Christianity, and us and those who might be Jewish, they center it as the center of and the city of God. But we know that over time, Jerusalem had been attacked. Over time, Jerusalem had been ransacked. And after the Babylonian exile, those persons who were members of that exile destroyed the city, beginning with Solomon's temple, and they destroyed the city walls. And so Nehemiah goes to his king, and he asks his king for permission to restore the city walls after they were allowed to rebuild Solomon's temple. He then asked for the walls of the city to be restored. After the children of Israel were allowed to go back after the Babylonian exile and build the temple, then Nehemiah, who is in Iran, which was then Persia, asked to build the city walls. Feel this thing. The temple, Erica, had been built. Darius allowed them to build the church first. Then Nehemiah, who's not even in Jerusalem, Nehemiah, who's not even in Babylon, Nehemiah, who has heard and gets an email or a tweet, someone posts the new temple, he then asks his king, could he be responsible for then building the walls? The church is built. The center of the community, Dr. Davis, is built. But then Nehemiah feels it is necessary to build the walls. Walls. Not the wall that the temporary inhabitant of 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue wants to build. The wall that the temporary inhabitant of 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue wants to build, that wall is to keep people out, especially people of a brown hue, and those who share this conservative ideology, but suggests unto you that it is for national security. They will suggest unto you that we need to protect the southern borders of America. But you can go to the library, you can just have common sense. And you'll know that no, and I say this respectfully, no Mexican has ever bombed any building or gone in any school and shot up no key into the United States of America. We know that the wall that the temporary inhabitant of 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue, and I'm going to say that until he becomes the exiled, thrown out, evicted out of public housing, inhabitant of 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue, he wants to build a wall that is not inclusive, but exclusive. Now, these city walls that were built in the Iron Age and the Bronze Age and pre-Jesus Age, these walls, of course, were built for protection. Somebody say protection. And these walls were built for protection. The people, they thought that they had to have a wall around their city to keep them safe. That because of the weaponry of that time, the weaponry of that time were not in machine guns. The weaponry of that time were not in tanks. The weaponry of that time were not in cannons. That only thing you needed was a city wall and a moat. Somebody would talk to the preacher this morning. And if that you had a wall and you closed the gates up at night and you had persons on the corners of the wall that could see marching armies coming and they would sound the alarm. That's why there's a watchman on these walls and why you find the term watchman throughout the biblical record. There's persons who called the warning and they would call the time, and it's the 6 hours, the 9th hour, and they would tell the this last battle that Joshua and his men had to fight. And we know that because of its walls and how they were constructed as a slant, you couldn't climb up the walls. Because they were so high, there was no ladder to reach against the walls. You know that they didn't have battering rams that were strong enough because of the thickness of the walls. And they could not find any military way of getting past the walls because the walls provided the citizens of Jericho with protection. Can I hear you say protection? And so the walls were there to protect the people. And so Nehemiah, in that mindset, says to his king, I need to go back and help my people. Build a wall to keep them protected. The walls not only symbolize protection, walls also symbolize a proclamation. Somebody say proclamation. So you see, walls speak. They're solid, even though they're cement, even though they're made of clay, walls still speak. Walls still suggest unto us just by looking at the wall that there's power behind these walls. There was power to create the wall, there was power to build the wall, but there's also power to sustain the wall. Seth and I had the wonderful privilege of touring the Vatican. You can see St. Peter's Basilica, and it's open to tourists to go in. But to get inside of the Vatican, you got to walk around the walls. You can't just walk into the Vatican and go up to the Pope's house. But the walls are there to keep that city protected. And you've got to go through security to get entrance into the walls. And the walls speak of the majesty of that city. For those Jerusalem inhabitants, the walls for Nehemiah symbolize that God is back in business. For years we have been displaced. For years we have been exiled in Syria and in Persia and in what's present day Iraq. The walls symbolize that we had been destroyed and it looked like that God had forsaken us. But after 7 years, as Jeremiah prophesies, they were allowed to go back to their homeland. And so the book of Nehemiah is the book of restoration, of how God allowed his people who had been disobedient to return to their homeland and build again. The walls speak that the children of God had been restored, that the children of God had been allowed to come back to their homelands and build again. There's somebody in here you've had to rebuild your life to. There's some of us who made some major mistakes in our life. Married the wrong man. Stayed on the wrong job. Moved to the wrong city. Bought a car we could not afford. Tried to hide it over our cousin's house with the repo man. Oh, now you want to say something? Now done come down your street. Some of us have had some bad addictions. And we've got a book of restoration. Where God has restored us back into ourselves. Some of us have put some chemicals in our hair. Too loud up in here. All of it fell out. You had to be unbelievable for a while. But ain't God all right? Won't he restore you every time? This book is about us. All of us in some way, shape, or form have been restored. And the Bible says that once you've been restored, let the redeemed of the Lord say so. If God has brought you back from a mighty long way, if you know you ain't been all the way you look right now, ain't acting the way you act right now, ain't lived the way you're acting right now, if you like the song words that you're living your best life, give God a little praise right now. Yes, these walls symbolize protection. Yes, these walls symbolize proclamation. They speak for God.
this building in itself speaks for God. The walls speak for God. Every time somebody comes up and down this road, the walls speak for God. And people so fooled, you're the pastor of that big church, ain't no. There's a big wall. You look at that wall, they think it's a big wall. That ain't all but a big wall. You're the pastor, yeah, I'm the pastor of the little church inside the big wall. Because the walls say something. So Nehemiah knew that the walls were important. But these walls also symbolize promise. Can I hear you say promise? Oh, yes, there's protection in these walls. There's a proclamation in these walls, but there is a promise in these walls. The promise was given a long, long time ago to Father Abraham that there would be a land for his people, that there would be a place for them to worship God in spirit and in truth. And even though the Ark of the Tabernacle had to move from place to place, had to go from tent to tent, had to be erected every time they moved someplace, David had the forethought, David had the spirit to want to build a permanent place for God to dwell. And even though David himself could not build it himself, because David had his own problems that precluded him from being able to deal with it and be able to build it, and for him able to complete the vision that God had given him. It was his heir and his son that was allowed to build that temple. And that's why we call it Solomon's Temple, and we still call it Solomon's Temple, because it was Solomon who took on the heir of his father's vision and completed the building of the temple. But after the building gets completed, Nehemiah said, we've got to build some walls to even protect the temple. The promise was made. There would be a land. There would be a territory. There would be provision given to my people where they will live in peace. Jerusalem, the city of God has made us Brooklyn Northeast some promises. And those promises are about to come to pass with our obedience. In 2006, the vision was given to create this congregation in Brooklyn Northeast, in the Northeast community of Richland County. This vision began in a dream you'll read about next week. And the dream was cast, and we caught on to the vision. Those of us who were part of that original committee who started raising funds for us to meet and create a congregation. For those of us who were able to purchase the land itself that we sit on, these 5 acres, cost us $300,000. And we were able to purchase this land because 300 people gave $1,000 quickly. Quickly, because they caught on to Pastor Jackson's vision. We bought the land even before we started worshiping at Ridgeview High School. But we knew we just couldn't build no building or no land without no people. And we knew, first of all, you've got to build people before you can build any building. You've got to build people. You've got to have faithful people before you can build anything. And so we built people at Ridgeview. We had good church at only thing I like about here is I got a bathroom. We'll build you one, Erica, in the back of the choir loft. But we had good church at Ridgeview. Can I get a witness? People gave their lives to Christ at Ridgeview. Amen. People cried at Ridgeview. We could have good church outside, laying on the ground, because it ain't about the building. It's about the spirit of the living Lord that's inside of the building. And then God gave another vision. When we had outgrown Ridgeview, we began to look at other places to worship, other places to meet, because we had outgrown that building. And so the vision was cast to build a small building first, and then when time allowed, we would build a sanctuary. Build a temporary dwelling first that would be just a temporary place for us to serve and to worship and grow. And then God would show the increase by a two-phase project. God has been obedient. God has fulfilled. unto us. Every step of the way, every vision that he's given, he's made provision. He told us to buy the land. We bought the land. He told us to move to Ridgeview. We moved to Ridgeview. He told us to build this building. We built this building. He told us we needed more parking. We bought more parking. He's about to sell the water tower to us in a couple of months. We got enough money to buy the water tower. Because the people of God have been obedient. Well, let me tell you what you're about to do now and what we're about to do now. Within 4 years, we're going to pay off this building. Within 4 years, we're going to pay off this building. We currently own $950,000 on this building. At the end of the year, we're going to put $150,000 on it. No, I act like no, I ain't never put nothing on it like this. That's fine. Look at that. See how they act brand new. How much I got to pay just to keep them on? They act all bougie sometimes. And they ain't never had to put none on it. We ain't got $950,000 right now. But we're going to put some on it. Tell your neighbor, we're about to put some on it. We're about to put some on it. We're about to put some on it. At the end of this year, we're going to put $150,000. And then, for 4 years, $200,000 a year. And that would get this building paid off. That is the plan. If you continue to be obedient, it will come to pass. I need you to just stay where you are. You remember Jeremiah told him, don't go to Egypt because you're going to die. He said, stay right here. God is coming back for us. God ain't really going nowhere. But sometimes our disobedience allows us to leave God. And I just need you to continue to be obedient to what God has already allowed us to do. And if we remain steadfast and obedient to what God has asked us to do, then God is going to make the provision to make the vision come to reality. Now, my brothers and my sisters, I want you to know that God built the building first and then the walls. He built the building first and then the walls. He built the building first and then the walls. You cannot expand in life until you get it first right with God. And that ain't about no building program. That's about your own life. You can't expand in life. You can't increase your territory. You can't get that promotion you want. You can't get that husband, that wife you want. You can't get any growth in your life. And first, till you get it right with God. And so they got it right with God by restoring his house first. You don't build a pool in the backyard before you build a house. You don't put the add-on garage. You don't have a garage and no house. You got to get the house right. And after you get the house, then you add on. So we got to make sure our house is right. And then God is going to add on. So you don't have to squeeze my sister who's carrying that angel with you through these tight pews. So y'all don't have to get your stockings ripped on the metal pews. So we can build a bathroom in the back of the choir loft while I've been listening to music. We're going to do what God has asked us to do. Well, you look bored. Why don't cities have walls anymore? I know that's what you've been asking your neighbor between playing tic-tac-toe. I'm sorry, spades on your cell phone. Y'all don't have to play tic-tac no more. Why we don't have walls no more? When the last time you've been to a city and you had to drive through a gate to get into the city? Why Columbia doesn't have walls? Why Elgin don't have walls? Why Irmo don't have walls? Why is there no wall around Charleston? Why there's no walls around Greenville? Why aren't there city walls and city states anymore to protect the inhabitants of that city? And the simple reason
they say darts and daggers. And so a dart couldn't get through the wall. A knife couldn't get through the wall. But the technology and the innovation, Dr. Davis, of a cannon who used gunpowder and a big metal ball that was placed into a drum and lit on fire was able to penetrate through the walls. And so once the cannon was developed, there was no need for walls because walls could no longer protect them. And so nobody built walls anymore because the walls no longer were necessary because the walls no longer did what the walls were designed to do. The walls were no longer needed because they were no longer able to do what they were designed to do. You have been designed with a purpose in mind. You have been designed as the image of the living God. You have been designed to look like Him, to act like Him, to walk like Him, to talk like Him, to praise like Him. You have been designed in the imago Dei, the image of God. And I just stopped by to tell you that there ain't no hell and no devil in hell. There are no fiery darts that can penetrate what God has designed in His image. And I don't care what nobody says, nor what nobody declares unto you. Ain't no hell, ain't no devil in hell. Ain't no enemy, ain't nobody around you can take what God has for you. But anybody know that whatever God has for you, it is for you. So stop trying to build up walls in your own life. Stop trying to be more than you are right now. Just wait on God and watch God. Hey! Watch God provide, as Jeremiah told the people, stay right here and watch God deliver, watch God bless, and watch God allow us to build again. Can I get a witness in the house tonight, in this morning? Can I get a witness this afternoon, rather? If there is a witness in the building, that no, God has designed you to be wonderful, that God has designed you to be the head and not the tail, that God has designed you to be above and not believe, that God has designed you to be a part of this building program, this building project, to be the nucleus that builds God's building, not just for us, but for generations, for generations. Just say yeah. Just say yeah. Just say yeah to the people of God. Say yes. God bless you. And thank God for your obedience. Let us stand upon our feet.